Turning to Alice, our Alice Miller reading. Quote, in the face of the Third Reich, Fest documents the servile, uncritical, and almost infantile naivete with which the men who were to enter the annals of infamy spoke of Hitler's omniscience, infallibility, and divinity. That's the way a little child sees his father. And these men never advanced beyond that stage. I shall quote several passages here because without them, it might be hard for today's generation to believe that these men, who later went down in history, could have been so lacking in inner substance. Fest here quotes Hermann Göring. Quote, if the Catholic Christian is convinced that the Pope is infallible in all religious and ethical matters, so we National Socialists declare with the same ardent conviction that for us too, the Führer is absolutely infallible in all political and other matters having to do with the national and social interests of the people. It is a blessing for Germany that in Hitler the rare union has taken place between the most acute logical thinker and truly profound philosopher and the iron man of action, tenacious to the limit, unquote. And then again, says Alice, quote, from Göring, anyone who has any idea of how things stand with us knows that we each possess just so much power as the Führer wishes to give. And only with the Führer and standing behind him is one really powerful. Only then does one hold the strong powers of the state in one's hands. But against his will, or even just without his wish, one would instantly become totally powerless. A word from the Führer, and anyone whom he wishes to be rid of falls. His prestige, his authority, are boundless. Unquote. And Alice says, what is actually being described here is the way a little child feels toward his authoritarian father. Göring openly admitted, quote, it is not I who live, but the Führer who lives in me. Every time I am in his presence, my heart stands still. Often I couldn't eat anything again until midnight, because before then I should have vomited in my agitation. When I returned to Karen Hall at about 9 o'clock, I actually had to sit in a chair for some hours in order to calm down. This relationship turned into downright mental prostitution for me. Unquote. And Alice says, in his speech of June 30, 1934, Rudolf Hess, another top Nazi official, also admits openly to this attitude, without being hampered by any feelings of shame or discomfort, a situation we can hardly imagine today, half a century later, then as she was writing. He says in this speech, quote, we note with pride that one man remains beyond all criticism, and that is the Führer. This is because everyone senses and knows he is always right, and he will always be right. The National Socialism of all of us is anchored in uncritical loyalty, in a surrender to the Führer that does not ask about the why in individual cases, in the silent execution of his orders. We believe that the Führer is obeying a higher call to shape German history. There is no criticism. There can be no criticism of this belief. And Fest comments on this. In his unbalanced approach to authority, Hess resembles surprisingly many leading National Socialists who, like him, had strict parents. There is a good deal of evidence that Hitler profited considerably from the damage wrought by an educational system that took its models from the barracks and brought up its sons to be as tough as army cadets. The fixation on the military world, the determining feature of their early development, shows not only in the peculiar mixture of aggressiveness and dog-like cringing, so typical of the old fighter, but also in the lack of inner independence and the need to receive orders. Whatever hidden rebellious feelings the young Rudolf Hess may have had against his father, who emphatically demonstrated his power one last time, when he refused to let his son go to a university, but forced him, against his wishes and the pleas of his teachers, to go into business with a view to taking over his own firm in Alexandria. The son, whose will had been broken over and over again, henceforth sought father and father's substitute wherever he could find them. One must want leaders, unquote from Fest. And my comment, as we, at least initially, before we understand with the help of the ancestors who want us to be free more deeply, as we tend to judge others by ourselves, it seems likely that the children of the Plato's tribesmen believe we, as they do, want leaders, and believe that their fathers, and one day themselves, as trained and tested philosopher king statesmen, are the best, the only fully qualified ones to lead us, and that they see, if we don't, that we must defer to them, that it is only ignorance behind a resistance is what I suspect they believe.